There's an interesting phenomenon that occurs as you work into different states of consciousness, that as you come into each new frequency of vibration or each new level of consciousness, you experience extraordinarily increased amounts of energy. Now, often you can't use this energy because you're not open to use it. And therefore, what you experience is a fantastic amount of tension buildup. And the feeling, I've got to do something, tension created. In the chakra system, that is because you don't have any vehicles for expression in any chakra above your third chakra. And there's too much energy to be expressed that way.
What is the third chakra?
I'm going to tell you. Good. Okay. If you can just think now, and this is all, you can use it as a metaphor, you can use it at any level you want to use it. Think of seven energy centers all in a row, ascending row, from one at the bottom to seven at the top. Muladhara, Svadhisthana, Manipura, Anahata, Vishuddha, Ajna, Sahasrara are the Sanskrit words for them. Now imagine that each of these levels defines a way in which energy can come into the system and a way in which energy can go out of the system. Right? And everything below the number four, three and down, energy can only come into the system through the gross body, through food, etc., like that. Now, taking these seven steps, now think of this as the thing that goes through the seven as a river. Okay? And you're going to travel up this river. This river is called the Sushumna. The first place you come to on this river, called the first chakra, is, think of it as being in the middle of a very wild wilderness in Africa, where there are wild animals, and you're into a survival concern. Your primary thing is to get roots and nuts and fruit and not be killed by tigers and, right? So that your total preoccupation at that point is with survival of you as a separate entity. Right? It's very much like an ape is like that.
Survival of your body.
Survival of you as an individual, separate entity in form. And all the energy that you all is used to, right, keep you surviving as a separate entity. That's number one. Now let's say you get that all cooled out and you start to travel up this river. The next city you come to is like the Riviera. You still take energy in through all, like this, but now you've got the survival bit cooled out and now you're part of a species that reproduces and you start to experience desire for sexual desire. And so the second chakra is sort of sensual gratification, the gratification of experiencing and feeling and gratifying oneself. Still, I am me separate. I can survive. Now I'll enjoy. Okay, enjoy is the second chakra term. If you go up the river a little further, you come to a combination of Wall Street and Washington and London, which is a third chakra type place, which is primarily concerned with ego mastery, control, power. It's extensions of the self. It's no longer for survival and it's no longer for sex. It's merely for enhancement of a symbolic self. So you collect, you may perform sexual acts for power. In other words, you may now perform a sexual act in the service of the third chakra. Or you may be a businessman who's collecting power for a second chakra reason, because he's doing it as a sexual potency thing. And when he buys a new huge business, he has like an orgasm of gratification, of, ah, oh, yeah, ooh, shoo, wasn't that good? Now, those first three cities include about 99% of the population. And the river gets very narrow and it changes its tone completely. They got huge steamships and jets doing the first three. But the minute you start up that fourth one, it's like a rowboat, you know, and a very primitive type rowboat. And there's... And there are big signs between 3 and 4 saying, turn back here, see, you know, we have what you want, back it, you know, the Hilton Inn and the Bunny Club and the... Don't be socially irresponsible, go no further, you know, do good, you will feel good if you do good. Third chakra. Or before you go on, eat this. That's a good one. Or have you yet experienced, you know, Hidden Valley in southern Wyoming at 2 in the morning? But for some reason or other, some people see through the whole thing of the first three chakras. They see the kind of finiteness of the whole trip. They see that it isn't doing it. And they start up the fourth to the fourth chakra. Now, up until through the third chakra, all the energy that can come out of the system only comes out through ego trips, through self, keeping yourself as separate. I am a finite point in time and space. First, I am protecting that finite time and point of space from you. Second, I'm going to make it with you to gratify this finite time and point in time and space. And the third one, I am going to control and master you because I'm going to feel, I'm going to enhance my ego by doing that. And since all of the energy, therefore, can only come out in ego manifestations of me, I will do this, I think this, my will, what I want to do, if you try, it's like a... It's like the huge telephone wires that carry wires from the generating plant. There are step-down transformers and step-down transformers and step-down transformers till you finally get it into the house where you may bring it in 220 or even in 110 voltage. And at that point, that 110 is just about enough for your toaster. And if you try to feed 220, you'll burn out your toaster. Right? Well, that's the thing about ego situations. Each ego... You burn the ego out if you try to feed too much energy through it. Because each ego is like each homeowner. He can only handle the energy at such and such a level. Now, what happens to many, many people through many reasons, like they go to the Fillmore, or they go to a huge dance scene, or they go to some high energy thing like Woodstock, and they absorb through what you call a contact high, they absorb fantastic amounts of energy. It comes in a new way for them. It comes in, it just comes into them. They don't eat it. It just, you know, all their senses are sent, information sent in through all their senses, because the first three not only allow it to come in through food, but through seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching. We say we get a high off, boy, look at that view, doesn't that get you high? Or, listen to that sound, doesn't that turn you on? And so, at a place like Woodstock or something like that, you overload the circuits, you feed everything in all at once, see? And there's huge amount of energy. People start to tune in on vast amounts of energy. They start to go behind the step-down transformer in terms of the amount of energy that's put in. But their responses that are available to them are often just the old responses, because that's all they know what to do about it. So they try to do it more and more. So you try to make love more and more and more and more. Or you try to collect more and more power, or change the world for good. Use your power. See, you get all this power and you got to do something about it. You eat and eat and eat until you practically explode, or you begin to see that eating is just going to go on and it's finite. See? Whatever it is. And when a certain set of prerequisites have been fulfilled, which come under the term, the word virag, meaning an end of worldliness, meaning an end of realizing that anything you're going to get in the first, second, and third chakra is really going to be enough, and that you can't use all the energy you got through those systems. You experience the despair, and then you, even though that little river gets very narrow and very absurd, it's the only thing to do. You don't do it because you're a courageous adventurer, setting out from the city and goodbye everybody, I'll see you later, and have a good trip and report back. You don't do it for that motive at all, because it's a drag. I mean, there's mosquitoes and, you know, it's a whole draggy system compared to how groovy it can be back in the Riviera in New York or London. You do it because you begin to see the finiteness of every trip up until then, and there's nothing else to do but do it. It's the only thing you can do. Like, as long as you travel in a foreign country thinking, I am traveling in a foreign country, you're a tourist, and it can't happen to you because you're collecting photographs, tapes, and stuff which you're wearing like a coat, but it's not being absorbed because you're holding on to this core identity and the ability to surrender into a new experience, to become one with it, to merge with it, then the thing happens to you. And as long as I am somebody from London who is traveling up that river, forget it. I'm not going to make it up that river. The only way I can make it up the river is when I've given up being somebody from London, and now all I am is somebody traveling up that river, because that's the only way I can be conscious enough to see how it all is at each new stage. When you get to the fourth chakra, the Anahata, in the Indian system, if you look at books, old Indian Hindu books, you'll see that the fourth through the seventh chakra is always lit by red beams that come from an om that's up in a corner in a circle like a sun, and beams are coming down from to the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh chakra, and then there's sort of a line, and then there's a grayish place in which one, two, and three are. And the fourth chakra is the chakra of compassion. It's the chakra of grok, for those of you that are familiar with that metaphor. It's the chakra of realizing, guts-wise, the brotherhood of man. It's the chakra of realizing the unitive nature of things. It's the chakra of going beyond. It's like It's Jung's chakra, really, see, because Jung was a compassionate being, and Jung, see, when you go into Jung's collective unconscious, you begin to see, just as if you go into astrology, you begin to see who you are one level back. You begin to see that you're really an Aries, just doing Aries things, or you're really a Scorpio doing Scorpio things, or that you're really part of a dominant archetype, and you're just living out your archetypal thing. You're living out your legend, if you will, and all the stuff you thought was who you were is merely sort of second-order manifestation of that, and who you are is somebody behind that, right? Now, the minute you've done that, you have freed yourself from the original identification of who you are. In other words, you're getting perspective by going up one level of who you are. So, like Tim used to say to me, my old partner Tim Leary used to say, dig your own legend. Now, he wasn't saying it as a big ego trip like, you know, enjoy your own legend, be legendary. He was saying, get out of your own predicament. You know, if you're going to be the Jewish mother, dig that you're being the Jewish mother. Don't sit around saying, well, I've got to take care of you. I've got to cook and I've got to sew and I've got to, you know. I mean, do the Jewish mother trip exquisitely because you're conscious you are doing essence Jewish motherness. Whatever your legendary role or roles are, dig them so that you get free of getting identified with a specific instance of the set, the subset in the set, okay? To mix metaphors further. If you miss a metaphor, don't let it disturb you. There's 10,000 more coming up. They all say the same thing. Buddha taught for 49 years and nothing was said. Okay, so don't get frustrated. The quality of the fourth chakra is that you can break the reality boundaries you were in by talking about a limited reality as if it were absolute. And you start to get into the world of relative reality. That is, you see that there are all other realities, and you can start to look at your own life in thousands of ways. You can see yourself as woman, you can see yourself as American, you can see yourself as a religion, you can see yourself as a race, you can see yourself as a humanoids thing, you can see yourself as a biological entity, you can see yourself as an electrical chemical thing, you can see yourself as protoplasmic stuff, you can see yourself as energy transmission, you can see yourself, and it's like baklava. You look at it all and it's just layer after layer after layer after layer, and you, oh yeah, right, of course, that too, that too, that too, that too, that too. Now, what many people do is they make a quick foray into the fourth chakra and then rush back to the third and then sell what they found. It's a very seductive possibility. Or they sell it in the second even. I mean, they sell it wherever there's a market for it. It'll give them the highest ego flash they can get. And there are many yogis who use their yogic powers in order to gain individual power. And there are many people in the Western world who use their siddhis, their powers, their spiritual powers for personal gain. Because the rational mind is a siddhi, it is a power. And you can use the power either to increase your own individual power, or you can use it to increase the consciousness of it all by turning it back inward, not using the power. The key to that whole business is not my but thy will. That's the key of submitting all of your powers, putting them in service of a process rather than stopping and taking your gains and saying, all right, I'll use them. I'll use them. See, the fourth chakra is the first chakra where one doesn't experience the feeling of separateness anymore. And waves, it's associated with waves of bliss, internal bliss. Waves of feeling of well-being. Waves of feeling of, oh yeah, that's just the way it's supposed to be. Waves of love. Waves of togetherness, of unitive feeling, of that moment of, oh yeah, here we are, that place. But most everybody has been on a very lean diet of that kind of stuff. And there are no habits of thought that allow you to be that person all the time. So you assume that you're just sort of going to take it and run, grab as much as you can. See, I'm going to get high next weekend, man, because I want to collect high. See, I want to collect high, since you're still defining yourself in third or second chakra or first chakra. And that's still starting to try to feed 220 through 110 system. Now, when you see that predicament, then you start to reorganize all of your habits of thought in order to define yourself now as a fourth chakra being. Like the first time you walk up to somebody and you say, I am love. Now, it is true that if you've got to say I am love, you're not. We all know that. But you're just experimenting with a new model of who you are. They say, how do you do? My name is Dave Brown. You say, how do you do? I'm love. I am God. I am pure spirit. I am part of all of us. And they say, oh, yeah, I know, but who are you? And then you immediately go back into the thing that you really thought. Well, really, I'm Dick Alford. What do you do? Or I'm a new one. I'm Ram Dass. So. So every time you experience that feeling of unity, then all of the personal time-space desires and attachments are no longer relevant at that moment. It's like if my body needs something, it all gets taken care of one way or another. But I don't sit around desiring it because I've now identified with a much broader kind of phenomenal field, if you will, who I am. I am the universe. Only under those conditions can you use higher energy, because then you aren't using the energy. Then there's no blockage, there's no tension, there's no feeling I got to do something, because there's no you to do it anymore. Fifth chakra is the chakra that is connected with Ramakrishna, is the one that we most associated with. It's a tremendous pull towards God. It's a tremendous pull towards inner, turning inward and upward. It's Ramakrishna. Characteristically talked, most of the Ramakrishna stories are fourth and fifth intertwining. He would go from loving the Divine Mother in all her forms, which is compassion, fourth chakra, to turning inward to go into that which was behind the Divine Mother inside, higher, into merging with one. And sometimes I've told about how he'd say, get me tobacco, and they'd say, but you don't smoke. He'd say, well, I got to want something, or I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave my body. I got to have something to hold me down. I got to have a desire to keep me in the fourth chakra, or to keep me down into a body, which is even below that. And when you see people who are called God intoxicants or masts in India, these are people who are in the fifth chakra. Their concern for their body, their concern for everything has fallen away. They're still on the journey into oneness, but they are at a stage on the river where all the mail that comes gets sent back saying dead letter office. A letter from London never gets there to the fifth chakra. And Ramana Maharshi, for example, becomes enlightened at 17, and then he goes off to the mountain Arunachala, and he sits in a cave, and kids are throwing rocks and feces and everything at him, and he's just like completely oblivious to it all. And then somebody comes along and they see this very high being, and they carry him to another place, and they try to feed him like a couple of grains of rice a day and pour milk in, and nothing's happening. He's just completely out of it, because he's in the fifth chakra. In our categorization, we often call these people catatonic schizophrenics. We got to be careful, because some of them are catatonic schizophrenics in the old terms, and some of them are these God intoxicants. But we don't have any discrimination in our system at all. So they're all put in total care institutions, which is a groovy place to keep them while they're doing their work. Then there is the possibility of sixth chakra, which is the ajna. The fifth chakra is right down here in the throat. The sixth chakra is right here between the eyebrows. It's when thine eye becomes single, you will see it all. That's the sixth chakra, the single eye. And it's the eye of wisdom. It's the point of causal plane. It's the point when you're in the sixth chakra, when you've traveled up that far, you understand and know and are wise about all of the laws of the universe. You see how it all works. You are the Godhead at that point. You are the mind that creates all the laws of the universe. You are one with it all. You see just how it is, but you're still busy seeing how it all is. Okay, there's still a separateness. And it's only when you go into the seventh chakra, the thousand-petal lotus, that you come into total merging back into what's called the Parambrahma, or back into that which is behind all form. Those are the seven systems, seven levels. You can do any system, you can do any yoga at any one of the levels. I see people do hatha yoga, work on their bodies, and I see them do it for sexual gratification or sensual gratification, because it feels so good to do hatha yoga. Feels so good to be able to do these far out things with their body. I see them do it for third chakra because they get mastery and power and control over the environment, and they develop powers. I see them do it in fourth chakra as an act of compassionate service, keeping the temple going to keep themselves as high as possible to serve, not in the ego sense, just serve. A person in the fifth chakra, were he doing hatha yoga, wouldn't know he was doing hatha yoga. It would just be hatha yoga was being done, like going to the toilet being done. And so on up, it's irrelevant. Now that's to say to you that every part of the yoga that I describe, of which we're really talking about it now, every part of the yoga that I describe, you can do at many, many, many levels. Take bhakti, singing love songs to God. You can do bhakti, or you can do that kind of thing. and you can say, wow, isn't that groovy sound? Let's all sing together, like sing along with Mitch type thing. You can do it as a kind of a collective, emotional, fun experience. You can do it as a pure exercise in one-pointedness at a much higher level. By Ram, 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 and then you go right out through Ram. You can do it at a third chakra thing to say, look how good I am, I'm singing, you know, love songs to God. Now, who we are in the West is all these levels all at once. Freud describes us as second chakra people. Adler describes us as third chakra people. Jung describes us as fourth chakra people. Taya de Chardin, people like that start to describe us in six chakra terms. The Egyptians describe us in six chakra terms. Most of us are functioning at many of these levels. We have moments of fourth chakra, we have dominant third or dominant second, we have moments of sixth, and our job, as we see it, we are in an evolutionary process of slowly moving up the spine, moving up these chakras, so that more and more of the energy and habits and whole way of life get localized in one chakra rather than another. That is, you do the survival thing till you got survival in order. You do the sex thing until you got the sex thing in harmony. You do the power thing till you got the power thing in harmony. You do compassion until that's in harmony. And you just keep moving through center after center after center and building models of who you are in terms of each of these new levels. Like Golding's Lord of the Flies is a beautiful example of when the kids are left alone, they go back into first chakra. Straight first chakra story. Now, if they all go through pubescence, then it'll become a straight second chakra story. Not because they, you know, just because they're now, something's happened inside of them and they're ready for the second chakra. Then they build an organized structure, an environment, an organization, and then they elect a president, and then pretty soon they're in a third chakra trip. And then when they use up worldliness, they start to be interested in fourth chakra. And so you can see man is just an unfolding process of these chakras. And the chakras are right inside your own body. Your tuning device are your own chakras. So that as you tune in to each new chakra in your body, you tune in to a whole new universe, a whole new level of perceiving how it all is. It's like you take sex, take the sexual act. The sexual act can be done by a second chakra person, as it most often is, in which I lust for you, you are object, I make it with you, and through that vehicle I get gratification, and one of the gratifications is the great wave of bliss that comes at the moment of orgasm. But you notice, except for at the moment of orgasm, the entire method is based on duality. It's based on the idea that I'm separate and you're separate and we're doing it for our mutual pleasure. But we're still separate beings. Now, what would it mean for fourth chakra people to make love? How would they do it? What would it be about? Who do you make love with? If everybody's the same person, who are you making love with? Does it mean that making love becomes an anachronism? I mean, is it all used up? Don't people make love? Well, the first thing that you've got to see and to try to feel your way into is that the experience, the highest experience you make love in order to reach, is where you live when you are in the fourth chakra. Okay? In other words, if you just drank your fill and then somebody comes along and says, how would you like a nice cold glass of water? The process of drinking the water doesn't do anything to you any longer because you already are the water. You've done what you need to do. It's already here. So then, if you already are experiencing the goal of what the means was, why would you do the means anymore? The means takes on a new significance at that point. That's where Gandhi says, at the point of the real concept meaning of brahmachari, which is what I am, is not that I am sexually continent. It just means that I can have sex when I can have it in the fourth chakra. But then the question is, why would I have sex? And the answer is, I would have sex in order to reproduce children. Because I wouldn't be having it for gratification, since I already have the gratification I'd be having sex in order to get. See, I used to think about these yogis that would sit up in the mountains all by themselves all day, and I think these poor cats. Man, they don't really dig how beautiful it all can be if they make it and have a home and hearth and, you know, the whole scene. So I began to realize that as individuals, they were experiencing exactly that same thing that everybody was trying to collect all the time. Except they had figured out that the thing they were trying to collect was something they already are, and they learned how to be it, and then they were just sitting being it. Well, now, does that mean that everybody, the minute they get to the fourth chakra, just sits on a mountaintop? And what happens to the world, and what happens to population, and do people produce, and why do they, and so on. If you sit down with your beloved, with your partner, with your Shakti, with your Shiva, with the yin and yang of it, and the two of you recognize the place in you where there is only one of you, and simultaneously acknowledge the place where there are two of you, then the act of making love is at the same moment an act of working from within oneself and simultaneously it's an experience between two people. So when you sit down opposite your partner cross-legged and look directly into their eyes, and what you see is a face, and the face looks desirable to you, that's duality. And you look, and your face simultaneously is looking desirable to the other person. I can tell you that. And then you say, yes, and that one too. And then you just keep looking directly into their eyes, and then the face changes again. And then you see somebody that's very repugnant to you. And they see somebody that's very repugnant to them. And you say, yeah, and that one too. And then you see somebody that is childlike. I've told this story before. It may be helpful to see what I'm talking about. About taking LSD with Ronnie Lang in London. And he's a psychiatrist. And Ronnie and I took LSD, and then Ronnie came over to me and he looked at me when we got high. He looked at me as if he were an old, wise, kind, good, protective father. And the minute I saw him looking that way, I felt like a defenseless little child, just embraced by his protectiveness. And the minute I had let myself totally into that one, his face changed and he became the most defenseless little child. And when I saw this poor, pathetic, defenseless little child, out of me came this fantastic feeling of protective, old, wise, kind Father. And the minute I had just gotten comfortable in that role, I'll take care of you, Ronnie. It's okay. I know what it must be like for you. His face changed again. And he was a fellow adventurer on a great journey. And into my face came the feeling of, wow, we're really journeying together. Did you see what we just did? See? Isn't this an exciting journey? And here we were having an exciting, all silently, all in meme, all in just faces and body. And on and on and on we went for 4 or 5, 6 hours, just going through role change after role change after role change. And that one too. And that one too. The executioner and the condemned. Son and father, child and mother, teacher and student, guru and chela, lover and beloved. Wow, scary, scary, scary one. And be able to say in each case, yes, and that one too. Right, and that one.